Good morning. It is top of the hour, and you are listening to Redwood Community Radio, KMUD, Garberville, 91.1 FM and HD1, KMUE, Eureka, 88.1 FM and HD1, and KLAI, Laytonville, 90.3 FM, and on the web at KMUD.org. This is your host, Tony Khalife, and you are listening to Directly Related, a talk show that delves into the intricate interconnectedness of human behaviors, experiences, and growth, and how directly related to the attitude and practices we adopt and cultivate. The ideas and opinions expressed on this show are strictly that of the host and guests, and not of the station itself. Morning, greetings and blessings on this Tuesday, cold Tuesday, with a dense fog that is out on the valley here, just hovering.
Yep.
We are here back again and directly related, but today is a very special day, and I think from this day on, I will be always joined by my partner and co-host, Shiva, who's a medicine woman and an astrologer and herbalist also. She has her hands in multiple different modalities and crafts. Shiva, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Hello. Thank you so much. I always strive to be what you describe me, how you describe me, but I really, truly just consider myself a student of life and all the mysteries that have been carrying us, humanity, through the ages and help guiding us. And today I'm honored to be here and share one of these mysteries, which is astrology, but not just that mundane astrology that all of us might have known or read through our horoscope in the magazines, but the true mysteries of the night sky. So why don't you introduce Danielle, my beloved teacher?
Yes. Our guest today is renowned astrologer Daniel Giumario. He is the founder of Turning of the Ages Mystery School. He truly is an outstanding astrologer and has been one since 1969. But before we dive in and introduce Daniel more, I want to mention that we caught up with him last week and pre-recorded the show when he was in Koh Samui, Thailand, at the Samahita Retreat Center, where he is acting as the resident wizard. And he is one, I gotta say. And because of the time difference, he couldn't appear with us at this hour, so we are airing a pre-recorded interview. His 9 a.m. was our 6 p.m., so you'll hear him on the radio saying it was 9 a.m. where he was, but it was 6 p.m. for us. Also, we do want to encourage our listeners, right, Shiva? We want to encourage them to call in.
Please.
Even though Daniel is not with us here, because you are a graduate and a mentor at the Turning of the Ages Mystery School, the astrology school that is founded by Daniel. Mm-hmm. And I believe, and you've done that so many times for me, that you can translate some of the mysteries that I must say they're quite above my pay grade here.
I'll do my best.
Yes, please. I personally have had many chart readings with Daniel. And I do say that his guidance is super accurate and celebratory. And I say celebratory because whatever it is that he counsels you with is always free of judgment and absolutely inspires you to be the best version of yourself and to live your life's purpose. He is incredibly unique and a master at understanding and decoding cycles of evolution. He is the wizard, actually, that most astrologers reach out to get a handle on the sky story and unfolding cycles. And as we get to dive in with him, he will tell us more about his journey with the stars and his astrological systems, and that uses a three worlds approach inspired by many shamanic traditions from around the world, offering techniques to navigate the upper, middle, and lower worlds. Now, this paradigm includes mythic, psychological, and spiritual elements synthesizing the most important ingredients that are applicable to contemporary global humanity. And above all, there's a strong emphasis on the experience and knowledge of the night sky. So I'm going to begin playing my files here, and here we go with our first Daniel question. Well, Daniel, it is honestly, truly, it's a blessing and a privilege to have you on our show, directly related. I get to hear you a lot since Shiva is on calls with you quite often with the school and the Venus cycle and mentoring. And I gotta say, it always sounds like an incredible, beautiful, amazing concert. I really, truly enjoy hearing your voice and hearing your cadences and your improvisations on celestial modes. So, totally, totally love your vibe. And I think you've had your astrological frolicking and romping up here in Humboldt County some decades ago, right? And you also had some kind of a radio show, right?
Well, actually, it was in 1987 when I was in what's called Saturn Square Saturn, nodal return, between age 37 and 38. I was living on Maui. And that was when I first fully was a full-time astrologer, although I had been doing astrological work since 1970. You know, mm-hmm. So this is my 56th year of being a practicing astrologer. But it was when I was in Maui at that time, I got this connection with a radio station there, got a hold of me and said, we'd like to interview you. And so I went in for the interview. And as I walked out of the interview, the owner of the station ran out after me when I was getting into my car. And he said, would you like to have your own show? So that actually began my radio career, and actually through the 80s and 90s. And when I lived in Nevada City, California, I actually was, that was about, oh gosh, that was in the 90s, through an early part of 2000. Anyway, I was a guest on four shows. You know, in fact, I had a music show. Mm. As well as an astrology show and those kind of things. So back in the beginning of the 2000s, one of the things we continually made available to people was a radio series that I did with a long defunct internet radio station where I went through the entire paradigm. And that was something which we used to give to, you know, to people that would come into the school. That's all been replaced, you know, by our online courses and summits and videos and so on. But yeah, I've had a long time. I love the radio very much.
Yeah, I think the first time I ever heard you or heard of you was on KPFA on the Visionary Activist show with Caroline Casey.
Right.
And that was, I think that was for me one of the most, it was at the pinnacle of the Venus return as well. So I got to experience one of your rituals that I participated in for myself, and that was death with intent, and that was an absolutely life transforming event for me. So, and
which just happened a few months ago,
right?
Again,
yeah. So, you know, having you here, and Shiva is here, and she's here as a backup in a major way, because so much of the astrology language is really sometimes kind of really hard to understand and hard to decode and hard to see how to come to terms with just to make it applicable to our life. So would love for you on this show to decode some of and translate some of the astrological mysteries that are so elusive to us mortals. And I think we should just dive in. What do you think?
Yes. You actually pre-submitted to me a few inquiries and questions, but which are great questions. Why don't you fire away? I don't have that in front of me.
All right. Excellent. So my first question is the celestial influence. And how does the celestial influence of the planets, how does it work on us, and how best can we understand it and strategize and work with that influence, and so that it becomes more applicable to our life and we can be a little bit more in tune with the big story and as it applies to us on a daily basis?
Well, first of all, right off the top, I have to say that I don't even use the word unless it slips sometimes, just due to the way language operates. I don't use the word influence.
Uh-huh.
Because influence is presupposing that it's a cause and effect relationship. And there are many, many different schools of astrology. I mean, there's some that are still in that old linear view, you know, like Saturn's in a certain place, so therefore it has a certain effect on us. I don't use that approach at all. I look at the planetary patterns as symbols, as above, so below, that correspond to elements of our own internal landscape. You know, so basically it's more of a view of which is more like correspondence. I mean, if you look at the history of global humanity, there have been other time periods in history where they've had it majorly about correspondence, and then there would be a regression into cause and effect. And then it would move up to another level, which is more alchemical and is more associated with the you know, I guess some would say the original text for astrology itself, which was the Emerald Tablets, which begins with as above, so below. But if you are an astrologer who works with the night sky, which we are, which works with land and sky, which is why we use the expression, the shamanic astrology paradigm in our school, that if you're using that kind of astrology, it is your connection to the land and the sky that places you in relationship with the patterning of the sky and the patterning of the land. And so human beings are part of the earth. So our inner psychology, our inner landscape mirrors that which is in the sky. So it's really more magical than it is a, quote, scientific cause and effect. Now, there are certain schools of astrology, and I'm not opposed to their attempts to do this, that try to propose a far greater, more subtle expression of maybe electromagnetic resonance, you know, but that to me is just an attempt to get away from how it really operates, which mm-hmm. is a set of symbols that correspond with the internal symbols. Mm-hmm. So I don't even use the cause and effect model. Otherwise, then the old blues songs would have meaning, you know, born under a bat sign or something. There's no good or bad in it. Our view is that whatever your birth chart is, when looked at the way that we do in our school, is the exact perfect set of patternings and symbols of that for the unfoldment of your soul in the current life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a language of symbols that, as above, so below. You can see it in the patterning of the planets and the constellational patterns, the seasonal flow, solstices and equinoxes, where the moon is. I mean, we actually have our course, our cosmology course that goes into that, you know, in great depth.
You are listening to KMUD Redwood Community Radio, Garberville 91.1. This is Directly Related. I'm your host, Tony Khalife, joined by my co-host and partner, Shiva. And our guest today is Daniel Giomario. And here we go off to the next question here. Shiva, you want to fire away here with a question of some sort?
Sure. There's so much to talk to you about, Daniel, and it's always great to have you with us. But I think we chose some of the topics that both me and Tony are relating really deeply with your paradigm. And for me, I think one of those big questions is the bigger work of your school, which is your School of Cosmology. You have renamed it to The Turning of the Ages, Mr. Iskol. And it was really because you wanted to bring this awareness to these long cycles of humanity that's unfolding during our lifetimes. And these are long forgotten, but there is always people who come and reminds of this. And you were talking about this is like in the literatures from 1920, you start hearing the whispers, the age of Aquarius. And every decade, everyone's bringing it up that this is now the age of Aquarius. But I know that we talk in the school about this bigger cycle that's actually the age of Aquarius is just a fraction of it. So I would really like for you to talk about this bigger cycle and how this so-called age of Aquarius is fitting in that.
Well, I would like to maybe go back for a moment to the 1980s. Well, the first school I had was called the Harbingers of the Turning of the Ages. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, so it was actually in the 1980s that I coined that expression, the Turning of the Ages. And there was only a few of us at that time period who were working directly with the night sky and had an interest in the larger cycles. And it was by recognizing the larger framework that you can actually see with your senses on the night sky, you can begin to see the face of the clock. Okay. And the face of the clock allows us to know where we are in time. All right. Now, the longest cycle that is possible to be aware of from one lifetime to the next, which is a natural cycle, is called the precessional cycle. And that's a lot of people have heard of that at this point, 26,000 year cycle, which is based upon the sacred motions of our Earth in space. The celestial equator, the tilt of the Earth, the fact that there's a wobble in the Earth, which creates this phenomena that you have different North Stars, you have different constellations showing up at different seasons. All right, and so that whole idea of the 26,000 year cycle became known as the Great Year, like we could say a 26,000 year. And then just as most of the world, you know, has adopted the 12-ness of things, you know, so you have 12 months in the great year, and those would be the astrological ages. Okay. Now, the question that always consumed people was, where do you begin and end the months? Hence, like in the 1980s, 1990s, I did a lot of research into this, and there's at least 40 or 50 dates people came up with as far as this is when the beginning of the age of Aquarius is. All right. Now, you see, the age of Aquarius is relative to the March equinox. And so it's really only the March equinox that has anything to do with the constellation of Aquarius. If you were a culture that was more concerned about the December solstice, winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, or if you were like Jewish and they're using the autumnal, the September equinox as their new year, there's different ways you can look at those four points, the equinoxes and the solstices. So some of us back in the 1980s, and where I was fond of using the expression, if all you ever talked about was Aquarius, the age of Aquarius, that would make you a spring equinox chauvinist. When in fact, there are constellational alignments that happen with all four points. Mm-hmm. Now that's the age. That's why we don't overemphasize the Aquarian thing. But I have more to say about the age of Aquarius as we continue this conversation. But back to the thing before, which is how do you know where to begin and end a month? And there's so many different zodiacs. There's constellational zodiacs. There are sidereal zodiacs. There is the tropical zodiac. there's so many different criterion you can use for where you begin and end a month. So what we did, based upon our knowledge of working with the night sky, is the awareness that there are two cosmic crosses in the sky. And that is the place in the sky, which is really relatively fixed. It's the same thing for hundreds of thousands of years, which is the intersection of the path of the sun and the intersection of the galactic equator. Mm-hmm. And they connect in two very specific places in the sky, in between the constellations of the Bull and the Twins, at the galactic edge, and in between the Scorpion and the Archer constellations at the galactic center. So there's these two cosmic crosses. Now, that's like the face of the clock. And then you have the solstices and equinoxes that are more like the hour hands that, mm-hmm. that go across the face of the clock. Now, some research that I did where I contacted an astronomer who does all the really exact calculations, and I asked him, when is the point precisely when the solstice intersects with one of the cosmic crosses? And that turned out to be 1998. Oh. Now, if you think of the 12 months of the year, how do we normally divide the months? We divide them into four seasons. Now, it turns out that at the four points in the 26,000 year, the solstices or the equinoxes align with the cosmic crosses, right? Now, that divides the 26,000 years into four seasons, right? Mm. So, and actually the, if you go a quarter turn back, back 6,000 years ago, then that is when the solstices were aligned with the cosmic cross, right? Now it's the solstices that are aligned with the cosmic cross. So we actually would say that if you must have an answer to when does the, quote, age of Aquarius begin, or the age of Leo, or the age of Taurus, or the age of Scorpio, which are all four constellations that will align with the solstices and equinoxes, so that's more of a global vision, rather than being a spring equinox chauvinist, right? So the global vision would say that the age of Aquarius, should you look at that one only, but you could look at the other three also, began, the center point was in 1998. In fact, the astronomer who did the calculation said it was in May 1998. Now, what we decided to do in our school, now called the Turning of the Ages Mystery School, which is a higher octave, really, of the harbingers of the Turning of the Ages back in the 80s, okay, that basically, if you look at 26,000 years, and if you divided that up by the degrees, you know, how long is 1 degree, 360 degrees? 1 degree is about 72 years. Mm. Now, what is really interesting about this is that if you go back to the beginning of the 20th century, many of the esoteric writers said the archetypal lifespan of a human being was 72 years. And that was one of the, I've expanded that. I mean, Shiva knows this. In our school, we now look at the archetypal lifespan as being like closer to 93 Saturn returns. But there would be, I can understand logically why they thought the archetypal lifespan was 72 years. But we actually took seriously the 72-year thing. So we placed 36 years on either side of 1998 as being the longer time span called the Great Turning. Mm-hmm. When is the Great Turning? So it started in 1962, and it extends to 2034. So actually, where we are right now in 2026, there's only 8 more years in the Great Turning, where the center point of the shift was 1998. Okay, now I need to bring up another topic, and this actually it's remarkable to me how many regular mainstream astrologers completely miss this. When you talk about the age of Aquarius, it has very little to do indeed with what we think we know about the sign of Aquarius. It's not the sign. Mm-hmm. It's the constellation. Because the movement of these solstices and equinoxes are into constellations, not the signs. And based upon our own view of the cosmology in our school, which we teach, it's about one sign different now. You know, and so in other words, 1998 was a point where a completely different constellation is overlaying a sign, right? So for example, what would normally be thought of as the sign of Aries, based on tropical astrology, the sign of Aries is simply defined as the time period from the spring equinox, 30 degrees, from that point and 30 degrees. The tropical zodiac is not the stars. The tropical zodiac is a relationship with the solstices and equinoxes. So it's an Earth zodiac. So actually, currently, we're just beginning the time period where the constellation of Aquarius is aligning with Aries.
Oh, I see.
So it's basically an injection of whatever the meaning we attribute to the constellation of Aquarius, not the sign. The sign is something quite a bit different. You know, the Aquarius is an air sign, while the constellation of the water bearer, you know, we come up with different names so not to confuse people. So the constellation that astronomers call Aquarius, is actually, we call it the water bearer. It's because there's a sign called Aquarius. Okay. And so now we have, it's actually, I'll bring up one of the fundamental questions. It was even something that was known by Ptolemy, who kind of systemized all the astronomy and astrology about 200 AD. Even in his school, they knew the difference between the two zodiacs. And they had a question in their school, which was, what is the proportion by which the constellation informs the sign? And it's, when you understand this, then you can get why it is the different ages have different characteristics. And it isn't because of the sign, it's because of the constellational backdrop to the sign.
And how does this knowledge benefit us as mortals here on this planet? And how do we understand these characteristics so that we can be more in collaboration with those ages, especially at this moment here?
Well, part of it involves having to know something about our history. You know, and very few people are really interested in that much anymore. But secondly, it's to not take seriously or to not believe what you might read as the meaning of the signs, because they're changing. Mm-hmm. So that we're in the midst of a great change to the signs. So one of the things that we teach in our school is that the sun sign descriptions that still a lot of people out of the fashion will use, the sun sign descriptions are very often the shadow of that sign. It's actually the down. It's the accumulated shadow of that sign, which is in the midst of major revision. You know, so one of the tasks of our school is to see that if you talk about a sign like Cancer, let's say, it's not the Cancer even of 200 years ago. And it's certainly not the Cancer of 2,000 years ago when they made the definition of it. So it's undergoing changes at this point. How this is a practical thing to understand is that if people are following the regular old sun sign descriptions, they're actually, for the most part, tied in to how previous cultures understood these things, and particularly patriarchal cultures understood these things. Mm. You know, so we are now like looking at how the signs, which we also call the mystery schools of life, the 12 signs, not the sun sign, but, you know, the signs themselves, and the planets all have gods and goddesses within them. You know, so it's there. You can't define one of them as a male. And in fact, I was just talking about this in the blogcast that I was doing with Nariah last night, which will be in the next newsletter, Neptune, the way, you know, the god Neptune. Well, in the latter Greek times and early Roman times, they allocated the entire world, upper world, middle world, and underworld, to the three brothers. when in fact, if anything, Neptune is certainly a female essence, archetypally female. and so is Pluto. Mm. I mean, Pluto is far more, it's the elements of the dark underworld goddess. You know, so the allocation of the brothers to the world is a patriarchal hijack, if I could use that word. So what's practical about this is that if you get a session using our techniques in our school, you're going to get something that is far more evolutionary as far as the journey of the soul now than if you used the traditional astrology stuff, which right. doesn't really work. That's why I've created the system that I did back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is great. This is actually will segue into our next question. But before we do our next question, I just want to remind our listeners that they are listening to Redwood Community Radio, KMUD, here at 91.1 Garberville. And this is Directly Related. I'm your host, Tony Khalife, joined by my co-host, Shiva. And our guest today is Daniel Giammario. And Daniel, you're at this moment, which part of the world are you in?
I live in the Philippines with my wife, but however, over the last, since the end of November, I had the situation develop of being the quote wizard in residence, at a yoga retreat center on the island of Koh Samui in Thailand. So that's where I now am. I'm not in my home office right now. And we returned to our home, in about 5 days.
What time is it where you're at right now?
9:29 a.m.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, our next question is going to be about Jung, Carl Jung, and the psychology of astrology. And your work is, as you put it, has always been influenced by the Jungian archetypal psychology. And can you please elaborate a little bit on that role and how it plays out, how psychology and astrology dance together in this context?
Yeah, sure. So there is Jung, who's one of the four foundational philosophical frameworks of our school. And Jung, in the 70s, and particularly the archetypal psychologists that followed Jung, I had the great privilege of having spent time with a man named Tony Joseph in the 1970s, who was, until he prematurely died, but he was involved in a project called The Remythologizing of Astrology, which was his version of a book that James Hillman wrote called The Remythologizing of Psychology, right? So this was, and much of the astrologers that I hung out with at that time were also bringing the imagery of the sacred feminine back into astrology. And the thing that's so cool about Jung, unlike Freud, I've heard it said that 90% of Freud's clients were men, about 90% of Jung's clients were women, you know. So hence he had a whole different take on the development of the soul, right? So anyway, if you think about this historically, if you go back to the Greek times, they had the whole psyche populated by gods and goddesses. They didn't call it, actually the word psyche is in Greek, but you could walk down the street and you'd see a statue of Athena, you'd see a statue of Aphrodite, and you would see the externalization there of the internal archetype. You know, I guess you could say the view here is that, and the view of Jung, the view of archetypal psychologists and archetypal astrologers is that the soul is polytheistic, you know, which is one of the reasons why that sun sign astrology is not particularly useful, because it's more like connected to a monotheistic one god above all the others, you know. So a polytheistic psyche has, in the old language, gods and goddesses, and we'll still use that language. But in archetypal psychology and Jungian psychology, then it's archetypes. It's not gods and goddesses. Although most of the archetypal psychologists will tell the stories of the gods and goddesses in order to describe the nature of the archetypes, you know. So like in our school, there are 12. We place a whole lot more attention on Venus and Mars than on the sun. So, and why? Because the 12 different Venus positions on a woman's chart, the 12 different Mars placements on a man's chart represent the 24 archetypal expressions. Okay. So they're each of them is different. Each of them has a characteristic, that in the old language, that would be a certain god or a certain goddess. But now we've expanded it into the astrological lexicon, you know. So and you can look at it also on a man's Venus position, because then that is what he's projecting, and using the language of Jung, it would be his anima, the projected image, the version of his own soul that is archetypally feminine. All right, and the same thing on a woman's chart with Mars. It's a projected image. So those are concepts that are definitely borrowed from Jung, but expanded on, because the problem with what Jung was up to was, and I'm not trying to be critical here, because he was a product of his time, but he basically was thinking that all men are projecting a certain image, and women are projecting a certain image. And the way the language on that would be is that a man projects Venus to find his soul. A woman projects Mars, or projects her animus to find her spirit. Well, this falls apart, because, I mean, there's some men who look for a mother, while there's other men who are looking for a muse. Mm-hmm. They're not all the same projected images. They're different gods and goddesses. They're different psychological archetypes.
It is not one size fits all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's really one of the foundational insights of our school. You know, there's so many, even to this day, books that come out, mainstream psychologists will say stuff like all men are a certain way or all women are a certain way. This is just so foolish, you know.
Right. You've spoke on our previous show when we had you on Chi Talk a year ago with Javi, Nona, and Shiva. You spoke about men are from Mars and women are from Venus, and how misleading that was.
Right.
And
All it does, from a slightly more psychologically rich dimension, it's just reinforcing the cultural beliefs.
Misleading, I would say, in many of its facets.
Mm-hmm. I like the part that you always bring about the archetypes, and I think it's more your addition rather than Jungian understanding of the archetype, that they're not set in stones. And there is mm-hmm. a essence to the archetype versus also the content or the context that the culture and the society and the time gives to it, which is also makes our understanding of the signs, archetypes, gods, goddesses, whatever we call them, just be so much more enriched. It's like there's some of them during certain times that are in favor and are other times they're just been shone upon, like a Scorpio, for example, right? Or Virgo, one of your favorites who you have totally revolutionized in a way. And that's just such a very attractive part of your teachings, Danielle. There is also this whole other side of the school when we study with you, and that's the direct night sky transmissions. And it's just such a big part of your work, and we barely see it in other schools of astrology, where an astrologer learns also the astronomy of the sky, but not just the astronomy, the cosmology that relates it all together. So that's a really one of my favorite part of your work. And maybe share a little bit about that practice and why is it important for us to really know the night sky. And one of my favorite quotes of you that you could have, I think it is, the name just slipped my mind, but you always say that, he says, if you don't know the night sky, you will come back to this life with weak bones in your life. Tell me who it is. I just
So I'll just
Steiner, right?
Steiner, So he's one of the four, you know, one of the four foundational philosophers that brings the spiritual foundation to this, along with Dane Rajar. I can answer your question in this way. All during the 70s, I was a what's called a transpersonal astrologer, following in the school of Rajar. And it was mainly without any reference to land and sky, really. I mean, it was just a more, a deeper, richer version of, you know, blending people like Sri Aurobindo and Carl Jung and the remythologizing of astrology that we've been discussing. But I went in 1981. I had the opportunity, together with Joan Halifax, who was then at the head of the Ojai Foundation, to go on a vision quest to Mount Shasta. And so this actually was just really revolutionary to me, because I had become somewhat disgruntled with the spiritual path I was on and the emphasis of the astrology. I mean, I was doing it regularly, but I do the vision quest experience up on Mount Shasta, and the kind of things that happened on that experience opened up a whole other door to me, which was that if I'm going to continue to do astrology, because of the transmissions that I got there, that it has to be based upon people knowing the night sky and working with the night sky. For the next few years after that, I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I started going out to Joshua Tree National Monument and found a place at the Wonderland of Rocks under a full moon where I got instructions. You know, basically, the whole transmission of the paradigm in the school eventually came through at that point. And so I started taking small groups out of the city to put them on the land and experimented with different techniques, you know, being with the night sky, doing astrology out in the wilderness. And so that's how it all happened. And then so in our school, Shiva, that to be fully initiated as an astrologer in our school, you have to go through the night sky initiations. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not enough just to know the left brain version of astrology, but to be able to be open to getting the transmission directly. And then you have the experience directly of the constellational patterns, the planetary patterns, connecting with the patterning of our own psyche.
It's like star tanning, you know, as opposed to sun tanning in the day. You just, in the night sky, the stars
star
are...
Tanning.
Yeah.
Just, well, I will say there are a couple of other astrologers that are totally on board with this. One of them is Gary Caton, and the other is Gemini Brett, who's in our school. Mm-hmm. But there aren't too many. In fact, one of the main reasons why I tried to actually make a connection with maybe the other school of astrology that is really concerned about the journey of the soul, you know, beyond mainstream traditional astrology, evolutionary astrology, as it's called. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to those people back in the 80s and 90s, and they basically were not interested in the night sky stuff, you know. There are some in that school now that are interested, but we're making some breakthroughs there. But it's getting harder and harder, quite frankly, because we're losing the night sky.
Mm. Mm-hmm. A lot of light pollution.
And also the LED lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Where I live, where my wife and I live on outside of Manila in the Philippines, they installed these unbelievable bright streetlights, 1,000 times brighter than they need to be. There used to be some solar ones, and they put these in, and it's just it's painful even to walk outside on our street at night. And you can't see the sky at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it becomes part of our mission and purpose in our school to continue to try to get people to go out away from cities, you know, into sacred site areas and to be with a dark sky, you know, because that's, if you think of our version of human beings, I mean, Homo sapiens sapien, I think it goes back about 300,000 years. And just think of how much longer mm-hmm. our brains and our hearts and our souls have been tuned to what we see with our senses in the night sky, you know. And that it's only recently that's been taken away. And so we need to reconnect with that. I mean, that's still in our genetic memories. It's in mm-hmm. our DNA. It's in our... So when we see the sky, it's opening us up to our much longer history as authentic human beings.
Well, I say Shiva here is she spearheads our night sky evening sauntering, and she takes my hand and she takes me and she points out a few things here and there, and starting to get to know the night sky. We don't have as much light pollution. Actually, we have zero light pollution where we're at. But what we have a little bit of a tree canopy that conceals part of the sky. So we'd have to move every once in a while to go a different location to receive some of the blessings of the planet and the sky. And it's, sometimes they are so bright. And I gotta say, it's a little bit, it's amazing.
Well, Shiva is, of course, in our school, fully certified astrologer, and mm-hmm. so she knows all this stuff. So I want to, she's definitely to be valued for what she does with that.
Oh yeah, she's a handful.
Definitely a very magical part of the school, and it's definitely a relationship to be cultivated. It's like it's been now. 3-4 years now since I've been, I think, fully initiated, and I had to do that all night long in the desert. Mm-hmm. I was so fortunate to be in the deserts of Arizona in Bisbee. I had beautiful night sky, and we did all nighter as it is that we have to do for our initiation. It's such a magical, it's like better than any last final exam that you would take at any institute. It's like just go be with the night sky all night long and, you know, have your own vision. But I think at that time I still, like, with all my studies I knew so much, but it is definitely a relationship to be cultivated, and it takes time, and the more I spend time there, it's just so magical. Now you see Jupiter coming, it's like greeting an old friend. There is Venus, there is Orion, or there is, you know, the Scorpio. It's like in different seasons you see your different friends at the evening or the sunrise. It is absolutely magical. So we're grateful for you.
Hey, Shiva, I would invite you to write up something about that as a testimonial for what you experienced in that all-night initiation. That would be marvelous, because we don't have any. That was such a brilliant example of what you can gain from that, you know. So I'd love to... I'm just asking, okay? No, if I might elaborate, if you want, I don't know how much time we have here, but I could elaborate on what you brought up about what Steiner said.
Mm-hmm. Please do. Yeah, we have one more question for you, and we're coming to
a
conclusion.
Why don't we do that
but give us shoot. Elaborate.
So basically, what he said was that it's really important to have more than a simply sentimental experience of the night sky. Mm. You know, oh, it's so pretty, it's beautiful, or, you know, he said that if you don't actually spend time learning its structure, which we can call the scaffolding, we can call the bones of the sky, you know, what we see with our senses. He said that it's very possible if you don't have a deeper experience of that structure that you can see of the sky, you know, the belt of Orion, the really distinct things you see in the sky, then in your next life, your bones will be weak.
Wow. Well, on that note, Daniel, I mean, you know, we're talking about the mysteries of the sky. What is your take on astrology apps? And, you know, how do you, I think so many people now rely on astrology app. Every time you talk astrology with somebody, they pull up their phone and dial up their numbers. And, all of a sudden now they have this relationship with as if they know who they are and what they are. But, that seems a little bit so off, because so much of what I see that's happening before me sometimes at retreats are people having a not an accurate concept of how they're coming across to other people. So there's...
I could not be in greater, more agreement with you. Actually, this has been what I've been writing about and speaking about the most recently, that our school is tremendously about soul-to-soul, human-centered astrology. And in fact, one of the things that has distressed me is that there's 100 astrology apps out there now, probably the best one is one called The Pattern that I put literally thousands of hours into it in order to form the foundation of that particular app. But now they have an AI chatbot astrology guide that you have as part of the app. And that, to me, this isn't, I'm disassociated with that. I'm not in support of that on any level, because essentially what you get from AI it will mirror back to you number one, what you want to hear or what you don't want to hear, okay? Well, and it will also, it's not very good research. It's like basically the large language models are all based upon what you feed into it. Actually, you're going to see something in the current newsletter. Naraya, one of our members of our council, asked Chat, whatever that thing is, you know, you can ask any of them, so when is the next Saturn-Neptune conjunction at zero Aries? And it gave an answer that was completely wrong. You could tell it was wrong. And so she says, I've done some research. I'm sorry, that's not correct. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right, it's not accurate. they went through three different things, and the thing just said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It you don't know what it's accessing. You know, mm-hmm. You got to do your research. It seems to be even worse than simply doing your own research using,
a regular app.
The stuff that's already out there, you know. It's rather pathetic. And so, you know, to for people in a lazy way to say you can name your buddy now, you know, so you just name that AI friend or whatever, and you can do well, whatever you name that person, right? So what is, I'm in my Saturn return. What does that mean? I'm sure it will tell you what it gets from the large language model, what it means. This is completely against the spirit of divination and what true astrology is. So it's just so lazy. It's kind of, I'll give you another example. Back in the 1980s, when I was learning the night sky, I had this like cardboard thing, and I would, okay, I want to learn that part of the sky, and I would hang out with the sky, and I might, with the little red flashlight, I would see whether, you know, I would learn it, you know, that way. Now, there are all of these night sky apps, but what happened, and they're better than using that cardboard thing, for sure, but now people are going directly to that and not even investing the time in learning the sky with their senses, you know. So this is just pure laziness. And it's so people, in fact, you probably have seen the research on this about how people's cognitive abilities are declining the more they use AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Shiva had a little encounter with Chat himself, and where she was proposing questions,
testing.
Yeah, testing him, and he was just getting it all wrong, basically, and he was agreeing with her corrections, even though I don't think he knew what he was talking about. Anyway, Daniel, it's so great to have you with us. I am so grateful for you for being here on Directly Related on KMUD Community Radio, Redwood Community Radio. And any last thoughts you'd like to offer to our listeners? Any events you have coming up? And maybe just give us the website and how people can get a hold of you.
They can contact me directly in my email, danieljamario@gmail.com. And then obviously everything you can ever imagine to elaborate on what we've been talking about can be found on the turningoftheages.com website, our school website.
And they can also get in touch with
Shiva. Coming up, I mean, clearly we love having people to join our school. I mean, we're supported by membership. We put out two free newsletters every month, new moons and full moons, that are just loaded with interesting content. I do a monthly video blog, and I do a long article every month. I do something called the Wizard Weekly that comes out of every week, that shows up on Substack, on Facebook, and on our website. As far as upcoming events, we have two live events in so far in 2026. One is Course 3, the relationship course, together with the solar eclipse in Spain in August. And then we're doing another Fayetteville Hot Springs cosmology event in September in New Mexico, where we built a large stone circle. And that will be a combination of Course 4 and Course 5. And that'll be Gemini Breaths once again going to be part of that with as a facilitator for that event. I'm going to be doing two small apprenticeship groups, one at Joshua Tree in September, and then one at Sears Point Petroglyphs in Arizona in April. You know, so these are small groups where I'm trying to pass on the knowledge of these places to people that are interested now.
Well, beautiful, Daniel. Thank you so much. Thank you, our guest, Daniel Giammario. Thank you so much for being with us, and to be continued.
Thank you for having me. Great talking with you, too. Thanks.
Shiva, would you like to give our listeners your website so they can get in touch with you as well, please?
Sure. You can find me at livingwiththemysteries.com. Make sure it has an S at the end. And my offerings are for Humboldt are donation-based. So if you'd like to work with me or any of the mysteries and offerings and the ask prices are out of reach, you can just reach out to me. I'd be happy to work with people on purely donation basis.
Thank you so much, K Mudd. Until our next show, which is the second Tuesday of every month. And I'm your host, Tony Khalife. This is Directly Related. Thank you.